This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted to be here in the Experimental Publishing Seminar at the University of Texas, Dallas. And we have four students here who are working on research projects that involve publishing in various aspects. So Josh, maybe you could introduce yourself and tell us quickly about what your project is.
Sure. My name is Josh Brummett. I'm a master's student studying emerging media and communications. And right now my project is making a digital literary magazine for smartphones and tablets that you can only read in places like parks and nature preserves.
Alex?
I'm Alex Garcia-Topete. I'm a master's student in arts and technology. And my project is dual publications dealing with feminism and the environment.
Hello, my name is Yvan Tina. I'm a PhD student here in the Arts and Technology program, and my project is called Virtual Africa. It's basically, at the moment, a podcast channel that allows current project on art, science, and technology going on in Africa and in the diaspora to be made visible.
Chaz?
My name's Chaz Lilly. I'm a PhD student also in the Arts and Technology program here at UTD. I am interested in scholarly communication and academic publishing and experimentation and emerging trends in the field.
We've been chatting among ourselves, and we've identified a few cross-cutting topics that we thought we might engage in a bit of a debate about. And so one of them is, how are each of your projects disruptive, and who would be mad if you succeed? So, Chaz?
Sure, I'll go first. My research might be disruptive, be considered disruptive by those opposed to open science, the notion of open science and open access. And just recently we were talking about how someone had stolen thousands of scientific and medical engineering research papers and posted them online for free of charge, and how this person had to flee to wherever, Russia, for asylum. Yeah, there's definitely a disruptive notion in the idea of taking things out from the paywall, from behind these the knowledge gatekeepers, so they've been called.
Very good. Josh, your proposal is rather scandalous. You want to help people go into nature and use their cell phone.
Yeah, I think I might be angering the actual people that I'm trying to market this to most of all. But it's... I don't know. It's definitely a project that either makes sense or is offensive. Trying to encourage people to not only use their phones outside, but to have a cell phone specific application just for the time that they reserve for being outside in nature. So hopefully, I mean, my goal is to encourage people who are going to be outside with their cell phones anyways to use this as an opportunity to deeper reflect on what they're doing and why they're out there. But I definitely can see that people who take or who consider being outside as kind of a sacred time away from technology are going to be a little upset, maybe.
And in fact, we have a colleague here, Paul Fishwick, that's been trying to convince our local art museum, the Dallas Museum of Art, that people should be able to go look at artworks with their cell phone. And in fact, some people object to the very idea that, in fact, you should enjoy artworks independent of all the paraphernalia of modern society and just experience the artwork in itself. And so there's a great parallel there with I think, the ambiguity of your proposal. Alex, who would be mad if you succeed?
Well, all the women haters in the world and those who want to see the world burn. But more than disruptive, I think that my projects are complementary to what already exists. A lot of publications that focus on feminism or the environment are more about criticism of current practices, current events, news, pop culture. And the publications, in my view, are about showing rather than explaining why feminism, gender equality, and environmentalism matter. Through fiction, through art, through other means, rather than just explaining on writing this scathing criticism of why Instagram objectifies women.
Right, and in fact, we happen to be living in the state of Texas where there are a lot of people who, in fact, would be on the wrong side of this argument, in your view, the climate change denialists and so on. So if you succeed, in fact, there may be a lot of people who don't share some of the beliefs you have that would be upset. Yvan, who would be mad if you succeed?
I don't think anyone would be, I mean, nobody would be mad if I succeed, because I think everybody hope that Africa get more, I think, visibility, because basically what most of the artwork that's all going on in Africa and even within the African diaspora is at the moment less known in the Western societies. But one of the entry that I think most interesting in terms of disruption is the potential that this project has in terms of language, because it will allow people in Africa and worldwide to be able to express themselves in their native language. So talking about mobile technology, one should also have in mind that mobile phones are the most usual ways that African people have access to the internet today. So I think this is also a key element in this project.
But at the same time, and we were just discussing this before, the history of the world is written by 0.1% of the people in the world and only describes what's going on in very small parts of the world. And so in fact, if Africa got its fair share in the intellectual discussion of the history of the world, it would reduce the importance of certain societies that have dominated those discourses.
Yeah, actually, I made a podcast with a guy called, an artist called Ralph Borland, who is a South African artist who makes basically robots by using traditional materials from craft and local artists in Africa. But he has another project called Global Arenas of Knowledge, where basically he made a critical analysis of the distribution of knowledge in the world between the North and the South. And he studies basically the impact of that distribution in our collective, let's say, consciousness, basically.
Okay, very good. So, you know, another thing that I think you already described who would be mad if you succeeded, right?
I did. Yeah.
Chaz. A connected topic is that indeed each one of you, and obviously we're in a school of art, technology, and emerging communication, so there's a really deep underlying value system that we share, that you all share, that you can solve artistic problems through scientific and technological lenses. So can you just talk a little bit about how you view technoculture and your projects, Chaz?
I would say I'm a techno-optimist, or maybe a techno-pragmatist, where I see really useful and practical applications for technology, especially in the arena of communication and knowledge dissemination. I think that taking out or democratizing knowledge is essentially an altruistic good thing. So I would say in regards to communication within the academy, within the university, it's ultimately a good thing.
Okay, so Josh, do you want to tell us how you view the whole issue of the value systems of solving artistic problems using science and technology?
Sure. I don't know if I would consider myself a techno-positivist, but a techno-pragmatist or a techno-realist. I am in some ways really really suspicious or kind of, you know, I don't always view every new technological development with open arms, or think that there is an inherent value in growth or development for its own sake. Just as someone who's come into this from the field of environmentalism rather than the field of technological development, I know that there are positive ways to use technology and there are negative ways to use technology, which has been the history of mankind since technology has been around. But I do think that, like Chaz was saying, technology has enabled us to democratize knowledge. And, you know, one thing that all four of us share is our projects would not have existed 50 years ago. There wouldn't even really be a way to conceive of some of the ideas that we're trying to do here. And that's been a fantastic thing for giving voices to neglected communities, or for sharing knowledge with people who've been excluded from the academy, or even just bringing in people into new situations and places.
Alex, you want to jump in on the value systems that you're buying into by using science and technology to solve autistic problems?
Right. I will jump on the bandwagon of I'm a technopragmatist. Technology is a tool, and it's up to us to shape the use and the value. Because if we want to use it for something artistic, something creative, then we will push that part of the evolution of technology. Writers, I always remember the anecdote that writers were too in love with doing it by hand, so that's why we got the machine gun 10 years earlier than the typewriter. So if someone had said, oh, we need to get poems written faster, that might have been turned around to write more efficiently rather than killing more efficiently. So that's technology in a nutshell, in my view.
Okay, so Yvan, within the context of your Virtual Africa project, how do you see the value systems embedded in science and technology, and how you use them in terms of your interests?
I wasn't really ready for that question, but for Virtual Africa, the use of technology, I don't exactly know how African people reappropriate technology today, given that I'm living here in the US at the moment. But one of the things that I've been trying to understand is this notion of second orality, which has been developed by Walter Ong. And I am trying to push forward this idea with the podcast as a way to develop what I've been calling a third orality that will enable people in Africa to basically develop a new relationship to technology by Walter Ong's basically called a second orality is a new systems of writing and even reading by which has been brought by television and radio. So I think that in terms of podcast, maybe African people, the African community could develop another way of writing, basically. By writing, I don't only mean language-based text, but another relationship with technology that will go beyond the current systems. I'm not exactly
sure. Okay. So I just want to close on another thing that we discussed. So it turns out that each of us was born in a very different place, and we've all lived in several places during our lives. We're all living a kind of nomadic existence with respect to geography. One of the things, Alex, that you brought up was this book you're reading at the moment on geographies of genius. So what is it that makes UT Dallas at the moment maybe potentially interesting from that perspective? You want to jump into that? So tell us about the geographies of genius and what's going on at UT Dallas at the moment.
Absolutely. I think that UT Dallas is primed in a position to become a generator of genius precisely because of the interdisciplinary that happens here, the diversity of backgrounds in the student body, the faculty, and just kind of the opportunity of exchanging ideas, exchanging projects, and risking doing something new.
Okay. Anybody else want to jump in on the topic, Chaz?
I'll say the economy is great in Dallas and growing in Texas in general. A lot of companies are moving their headquarters to North Texas. We're having an event on campus this week hosted by Toyota, who's moved their headquarters to here in Plano. And I would say yes, the economy, also the ties to the telecom corridor. We have all these telecommunications companies in North Texas are really driving growth. And if you look at UT Dallas as a university, I think we've grown from 14,000 to 24,000 students in less than 10 years. So the growth is amazing.
Josh, you want to just jump in on this?
Sure, yeah. The thing that I think is fascinating about Dallas is that there are, you know, Dallas has always been seen as this moneyed place, right? If you meet somebody from even outside of the U.S., they will know about Dallas from, you know, Who Shot JR, and the oil boom, and it's, but now it's a place where a lot of this money is going back towards both scientific investment and investment in the arts. I mean, we've got a fantastic symphony and an opera, and the whole arts district is great. And I think that that brings into this idea of diversity, both of interests and focuses, as well as, you know, this is a surprisingly international city for being right in the middle of the prairie, and being sort of on the forefront of having international airports was an interesting thing for Dallas that has created a unique city.
And you know, ironically, and I'll let you, Yvonne, also jump in, but ironically, just the accident of the five of us being in the room at the same time, Chaz was born in Florida, Yvonne was born in Cameroon, Alex was born in Mexico, Josh was born in Texas, and I was born in Paris. And so, in fact, we're all mongrels, and I think, and I often joke that my French university was an amazing monoculture in terms of the backgrounds and the dominant culture in that location. Whereas here, indeed, we're dealing with a very mixed variety of backgrounds. That happened to be here at the same time. I don't know, Yvonne, you want to?
No, I don't have anything particular to add, but I hope that, because I know that UTD has a strong relationship with Indian universities, I hope that we could see the same thing happen with African universities in the future.
Okay, so maybe on that note, let's end our discussion. Thank you, everybody, for joining in this conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.